I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and I am thrilled to be here. Boy, we got a lot going on, don't we? A lot of it is scary. A lot of things going on in our country right now, and in the world, as a matter of fact, is pretty strange. We are stripping away history, arguments for reasoning of that besides. We are stripping away history. We are freezing people's free speech. We are demonizing many of the institutions that provided us with a chaos-free society. I'm speaking about the police. We are seeing groups from the left taking over parts of our country. We are seeing protest in the street, and we're seeing politics at its absolute worst. Now, of course, that's a lot to unpack as we're moving forward, but I got to tell you, as a retired police officer, it is horrifying to see the way police officers are being treated across the country, as though every single cop is a bad cop, a crooked cop, an evil cop, a racist cop. And that is not the case. It does no one any good for us to pile on this opportunity to attack our police. Now, in previous episodes, I had talked about people who are protesting the death of George Floyd, and we all stand with them. George Floyd was killed inappropriately by a police officer, a single individual police officer, or several in his group there, however that trial comes out. But we know that Officer Chauvin kneeled on his neck until he died. That was one individual cop. That is not all our cops. The argument that is being made on the left and is not being answered anywhere is that, well, this is so rampant that every single day police officers are out hunting down young African-American men to kill them is infuriating and inappropriate. That is not what's happening. When you look at the actual statistics, you see the numbers are much, much lower than all of the frantic press and statements that people are making. Go ahead and look them up. Would anybody look them up? Does anybody look up the actual statistics? Now, granted, one inappropriate death is one too many. And that goes for any human being, regardless of your race. But if we're going to address the concerns of our African-American brothers and sisters, to think that police officers are hunting down young black men to kill them is not only inappropriate, it does no one any good whatsoever to even open the conversation there, because that is not true. That's not what's happening. But we're seeing a wider demonization of the police. We see the movement to defund the police. What do you think exactly would happen if you defunded the police? If we had no police departments, who would you call in an emergency? Now let's just take away the healthcare emergencies. Let's take away the check on somebody emergency. Let's look at the thing like where someone's breaking into your home, or someone in your family has been attacked, or there's been some kind of criminal activity where you are. Who's going to handle that for you? Right? It's our police that handle that. And they do a pretty good job across this country. What I would say is there room to say maybe we can take away some of the responsibilities of our police so that they can concentrate on criminal activity and not be social workers? In my agency, and we were a bigger agency in New Jersey, we went from investigating serious crimes, homicides, robberies, and rapes, traffic accidents where people were killed on the highways, to going to Mrs. O'Leary's house to help her by turning her hot water heater on. Okay, we were the resource that people reached out to when they had no one else to call. Who do you call? You call the local police, because they show up, and then they come out and do whatever it is that helps you. So we saw everything in that spectrum. We would go see when someone was having a mental problem. Well, you have police officers who are not always highly trained in that area, but they would go and see, is there any danger to anybody? What can we do? Is there any danger to the person who's acting up? Can we get them to a hospital and get them help? Maybe that's the kind of stuff that we shouldn't send the police to anymore. Maybe they should not do that at all. Maybe there should be social welfare teams that go out to handle that. The problem with that, I've been on a lot of those calls. And while you may have a lot of people who are having mental difficulties who are rational enough to talk to you, that are calm enough, compliant enough to go get help for themselves, there's also a lot of people that will be brandishing weapons that will want to kill you when you show up. Now, this is where we run into conflict sometimes, that someone will say, I called the police for my son who was having a mental breakdown and the police killed him. Well, the police just didn't show up and say, well, let's kill this guy, he's having a problem. Normally, the police show up and that individual approaches the police with a weapon of some kind, runs at them with a knife. For those of you who have never heard of the 21-foot rule, the 21-foot rule means if I am standing there and you're 21 feet away and you lunge at me with a knife, you can get to me from 21 feet away before I can unholster and protect myself. So 21 feet is pretty far. Most of those encounters take place much closer. Many years ago, when I was a junior police officer, patrolman out in the street, I got sent to a house because a woman was having difficulty with her teenage son. He was 17 years old. He had mental conditions. He was on the spectrum. Not a very functioning young man. He didn't speak. And he was also very big for 17. He was about 270 pounds, 6'3". Right? I was not that big. I'm 5'10", and at the time I was probably 210 pounds. Well, I showed up at the door because the woman was having trouble with her son. He wouldn't listen, and she said he's a special needs kid. So I showed up to the house. I went in. I spoke to the mom. She says, listen, my son is in his room. He's breaking things. You know, could you just talk to him and tell him not to do that? You know, he often responds to men very well. He'll calm down and he'll stop. I said, sure, of course. Let me go help this young man. Well, she took me up to the room and she opened the door and whatever his name was, I'm going to call him Jerry. She said, Jerry, there's a policeman here to talk to you about how you're behaving. And I stepped into the room and there was this very, very large young man. And he looked at me and he immediately, I could tell he got scared when he saw a police officer. And he started to shake, and he wanted to cry, and I calmed him down. I said, listen, there's nothing to be afraid of. I'm just here because your mom says you're having some trouble today, that you're having difficulties. And he shook his head. Yes, he was having difficulty. I said, she says you broke some things. And he looked around. There was a broken lamp. There was a table turned over. I said, that's all okay. What can I do to help you? And he started walking towards me. So I thought he was going to come over and try and communicate to me in somehow. Well, he got about 3 feet away from me. He lunged out, grabbed me by the neck with both hands, and we both ended up on the floor where he was choking the life out of me. This happened instantaneously. A little bit of naivete on my part, a lack of experience with people with these kind of conditions, and totally unexpected. I was there to help and do good. And instead, I'm laying on the floor with this enormous young man on top of me, literally choking the life out of me. I tried to push him off. I tried to hit him. I tried to do everything I could. There was nothing I could do at that point but die. And I started to see the little stars in my eyes, and I realized the only way out of this was to draw my service weapon and shoot him so he would stop killing me. Well, at that point, his mother saw me fishing around for the gun on the side of my hip, and she actually took something out of the room. I remember if it was a lamp or something large, and she smashed him with it, at which point he let go of me, ran to the corner of the room, and cowered and cried. And at that point, I got myself up off the ground. I called for some help, some ambulances, and some more cops, because at that point, I was almost murdered on the job trying to do the right thing. So maybe cops don't need to go to those kind of things. Maybe social workers can go to those kind of things. Because at that point, social workers would not have a gun on their side, and they would just get choked to death, and that would be a better outcome. It is what it sounds like people are saying, than for the police to protect themselves. Now, I don't tell you that story to make a case one way or the other for that. What I'm simply saying is the things we put our police officers into, the situations we demand of them, are not as easy as they would say from the newsroom or from the reporter's point of view or from people who have absolutely no experience with these kind of things whatsoever. So I'm looking at this, I'm saying, Is that a possibility? Can we take somebody's jobs away from our officers? Yes, absolutely. I think we should. Matter of fact, the police should not be going to somebody's house to check on their welfare. Police should be looking at criminal activity only, protecting us from that, right? Burglars, robbers, rapists, that kind of things. Do we want our police officers to investigate drug crimes anymore? Is that something we're just going to say, forget it. Don't investigate drug crimes anymore. Well, if you do that, you'll eliminate the need for search warrants for drug cases where a lot of people get hurt and killed. Because guess what? Believe it or not, people don't want to get arrested. They don't want to go to jail for selling their drugs. So if we just eliminate drugs as a criminal activity, we eliminate all the contact with law enforcement, that they don't have to then come to the house and try and protect the neighborhood from a drug dealer. You just let drugs run wild in a neighborhood, and everybody can buy their drugs and use their drugs and get stoned out and overdose and die. And maybe that's the answer. And then the police will not be there interacting with people negatively. So we can go down the list of all the things we expect from our police officers. And we can say some jobs we absolutely can take away from them. There's not everything they need to do. They don't need to do those kind of things. So let's then look at the arrest process. What can we do with the arrest process? How do we make that safer for people? Because obviously people end up, they end up resisting arrest, which everyone now seems to think is a right to resist arrest. If you don't agree or you don't want to be arrested, you don't have to be arrested. You can fight your way out of it. And that's legitimate response to the police being there to arrest you for whatever crime you're being charged with. So let's look at our arrest process. Let's say someone reports a sexual assault, okay? And they describe the individual, this is where the person lives, I saw their car, this is their license plate, and the police find, there's evidence of a sexual assault, we know where the person lives, let's go to their house. Normally, you would go and arrest them, right? You'd hold them to account for their actions. So let's say the police show up at the person's house and knock on the door, and when the suspect answers the door, the police say, listen, we have a warrant for your arrest for sexual assault. You're under arrest. We'd like you to come out of the house. And the person, they can make a choice. They could say, well, I don't agree. I don't think I did that. So I'm not under arrest. I'm not going to be arrested. And I don't want you on my property anymore. At that time, the police have a couple choices. Currently, if there's a warrant and a person says that, we would simply grab them and arrest them. See, that's where the conflict usually comes in, with a person who doesn't want to be arrested or doesn't think they should be arrested. At that point, they're going to fight. They're going to fight with you. Maybe they fight with fists. Maybe they got a knife. Maybe they got a weapon. Maybe they pick up a candlestick, right? And they're going to fight with you with that. Now, we've kind of said our police officers, they don't have to get assaulted. That's not their job. They don't have to get murdered. That's not their job. But maybe we want to change that rule a little bit and say, well, if a person that you want to arrest doesn't want to be arrested and the police insist, then they don't have a right to fight back with any violence that comes their way. The police just have to take it. So if the person shoots them, shame on the cop for trying to make the arrest. Or if the person hits them over the head with that candlestick, maybe that's what the cop deserved for continuing on with an arrest when the person didn't think they should be arrested and didn't want to be arrested. And that would eliminate a lot of those concerns. If the police aren't allowed to fight back, then nobody's going to get hurt, right? Except for the cop, of course, which, you know, is what people think is appropriate these days, you know, that the cop should get hurt, not the person who's resisting. Or let's change the paradigm completely. Let's say the officers knock at that door and this individual says, well, I don't agree. I don't think I sexually assaulted anyone and I'm not under arrest. I won't go. Well, the police could leave him a pamphlet on, you know, proper behavior with other people, or maybe say, hey, just so you know, there is a warrant for you for this, and I know you don't agree, you don't think you did it, but if you want to turn yourself in when it's convenient for you, you know, just pick any police department, just show up out front and tell them, you know, you're there to turn yourself in for a sexual assault warrant, and they'll process you, you know, if you want to be processed. If you don't want to be processed, you just want to tell them you're there, you know the warrant's there, that's good too. And that way that would stop that conflict. You know, we don't actually have to arrest people out in the field. If they choose to turn themselves in and face justice, then that'll be good, right? That'll be good for everybody because then the cops are not engaging in those kind of violent type of encounters with people who don't want to be arrested. They just won't arrest people. They'll tell them, hey, listen, yeah, there's information that you committed a crime and there's a warrant for you, but hey, you don't want to go. If you feel like turning yourself in, turn yourself in. Then we could set up a whole nother bureau of social workers who could then go to the victims and say, listen, I know you reported that crime. That was really good that you reported. But the person doesn't think they did it, and they don't want to be arrested. So unfortunately, we have a lot of counseling that can talk to you about this because, you know, there's going to be no trial. The person's not going to turn themselves in. They don't think they did it. You know, what else are we going to do? We can't do anything else. So that would certainly cut down on the involvement with the police. If somebody calls and reports a robbery, all right, the police, instead of racing there with lights and sirens, right, instead of racing there to try and protect the business owner or the people in the stores and of course, arrest the guy or girl that's got the gun or the knife robbing the place, maybe the cops don't need those red lights and sirens. Maybe they should just, you know, get there when they can. You know, maybe they stop for coffee or they stop to get a donut or whatever, and eventually they go there and they just take a report. If we have our police just be report takers, right, instead of law enforcement personnel, that would solve a lot of the problems, right? Because, oh, there's a robbery in progress over at the 7-Eleven. But, you know, if we get there, the bad guy might still be there, and that could cause a problem for us. You know, then there's a conflict. Somebody could get hurt. Let's stop and get coffee first. Give him 15, 20 minutes to finish up, and when he leaves, then we'll go over and we'll just take the report. Mr. Jones, boy, we're going to call you an ambulance for that knife sticking out of your neck. But what happened? What happened here? And they could just tell us all the facts of the robbery. We could write that all down. If they have video, we can get the video. And then we fall back to the first part of this. We can either get a warrant and send it. Maybe we send the person a nice letter. Hey, listen, don't want to upset you. Don't want to get you angry. But you've been identified as someone who committed a robbery and stabbed a guy. If you feel you're guilty of this and you want to turn yourself in, go ahead to your local police department and we'll take care of that for you. If not, you know, thanks for reading this letter. And then, of course, the Bureau of Victimization will go over to Mr. Jones and explain to him why. Well, there'll be no arrest or case for anything here. You probably should have just gave the guy the money without arguing with him. Right. Because, you know, he deserved to come in and take that money from you. Who are you to keep that money from somebody who actually needs it? And that would cut down, I think, on most of the conflicts we have that are of our police doing things. Say our police are out and they're on donut time. Right. They're sitting there having donuts in their lunchtime and they see someone being mugged, you know, a block away. And they see three people beating up somebody trying to take their wallet. Normally, that the police would, at this point, would go racing up to that situation and try and protect that victim and arrest the criminals, right? Can you see the conflict there? Can you see the problem with that? You get these cops running up and they want to arrest. But those people probably don't want to be arrested. They just wanted to do robbery. But now the cops are there. It causes a conflict. Maybe one of them has a weapon. Then the cop feels like, oh, geez, I should protect myself. Maybe I shouldn't protect myself. And then somebody could end up hurt. So again, we fall back to the other rules. The police see it. They should probably call it into their headquarters. Hey, just, you know, hit a notification card that I think I see a robbery taking place. I'll wait till it's over and then we'll go over to the victim. Could you send the victimization bureau out here to talk to him? And, you know, we'll call out to the robbers and see if they want to stop. But, you know, if not, we'll just move on. Okay. Does this sound as absurd to you as it does to me? As ridiculous as it does to me? But this is what it sounds like what people are calling for. Now, I know, in reality, they're just calling for no police brutality. I agree, 1,000%. There should never be any police brutality at all, right? But I don't know how we get to that ultimate point when you're putting men and women in a position of danger and they feel they have to do things to protect themselves. I don't know. I think we should all think about this a little bit more as we go forward. I'll be back in a minute here with more Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
AmericaOutLoud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. As we celebrate our 4-year anniversary, thank you for making it all possible. Well, shouldn't news deliver truth and inspire us to reach higher? With blogs, podcasts, video, and 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Hello,
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Chasing Justice. Here we are in Ding 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 Round 2. You know, just so you know, as we move forward, we're going to be grabbing the guys and girls in the neighborhood and getting them back on the program here. It's been quite a hiatus for people as they're all locked down in COVID-19 safety and security, squirreled away in their homes, protecting their health and welfare by not coming out. But slowly and surely, the world is opening up again. Even here in the People's Republic of New Jersey, we are slowly and surely opening back up again. We have dates where we can have groups of 500 people, which is pretty good. You know, you can start to, you know, maybe get concerts together where people can go out to bars and restaurants again. That would be really great. We're just waiting to see, you know, if there is a spike, if there is a return to the virus, and we could shut everything back down again and continue on our merry way of everybody just staying home. Now, along that line, I had an interesting conversation with my son Joe, the attorney of record here on Chasing Justice. And we were talking, me, him, and a friend named Paul of his, that we're getting together, talking about business and the work life and what's going on. And we were all in agreement that, you know, I've been working from home for months now. Joe's been working from home. Paul's been working from home. And we're all in diverse businesses. We all do all different kinds of things. But what we're finding is that entire businesses are finding it functional. You can function by your people working from home. I think the previous thought about people working from home is that they would get paid and they wouldn't do any work. Well, I think we've kind of shown here that that's not really the case. People will get paid and they will do their work because they want to continue to get paid. Is it a little difficult working at home from time to time? It is, because you got, you know, other people around, you got distractions, you got things you're not really prepared for. But over the course of a couple of months, we managed to work all of these things out, pretty much all of us who are working from home. Other than the occasional Zoom meeting where somebody walks by in the background naked or children are doing something crazy. But other than that, it's been pretty harmless. And I think what business owners are finding out is that why would I pay these outrageously high rents in Manhattan, Philadelphia, and these other big cities when we can have a small office outside the city and everyone can work from home and electronically turn in all their work? Now, there's always going to be people that have to actually physically go to the building to do work, but you don't need a big Manhattan office to do that, do you? No. So you can cut that all out and you can move to a smaller place outside of Manhattan. And staying outside of Manhattan is really just as nice. I mean, there's places in Jersey City, which is getting expensive, but it's less than Manhattan. You got the outer boroughs, or you could even go to Long Island. You could go further into New Jersey, different areas where you still have great accessibility to the city without having to be in the city. So I think people are finding out a lot of these things about how they can do work from home as we move forward here. So we've learned some lessons. All right, so as you can tell, I kind of moved on from what we talked about in segment one because I had to calm down a little bit. I was getting myself really worked up because of what we're seeing with the police. So I'm going to touch on some other subjects right now. But before I do, I just want to give one final thought about this. See how this is twisting me around? I want to make sure I cover things the right way. You know, police brutality is something that should never be tolerated, ever. And as a police officer, I would never tolerate brutality. I was in internal affairs for a long time, and I investigated. And when somebody did something wrong, they were held to account. They just were. This was not something we ignored. You know, I heard from somebody. Somebody told me a story recently, a friend of mine who's on the left. And they said, recounting, you know, hundreds and hundreds of cases of police brutality that have gone uninvestigated because, you know, cops just stick together and they don't investigate police brutality. And one of the stories was a young woman and her boyfriend, I think they were African-American, were stopped for no reason whatsoever. She was 8 months pregnant. She was pulled from the car and the police decided to kick her in the stomach, which, of course, led to her losing the baby. And nothing happened to the cop. Now, when I first heard this story, I was shocked and I was horrified to think that a police officer would do such a thing. So I asked for some specifics. And I said, well, first of all, if anyone did anything like that, the doctor at the hospital would have to report what happened. That this young woman lost her baby because a police officer kicked her in the stomach for no reason, causing her to lose the baby. And that would cause an investigation. You wouldn't just call up and say, listen, one of your cops kicked this woman in the stomach. She lost her baby. And the cops go, yeah, well, too bad. We're not reporting that. We're not looking into that. That would never happen. There would be a major investigation on a thing like that. So my answer was, well, maybe when she made the police report, you know, that would shed some light on the situation. And I was told, well, there is no police report. The woman is just suing the police. I said, that doesn't make sense. That was a major assault on this person. That should be investigated. There should be criminal charges if that's all that happened. For no reason, the cops stopped this young man and woman, pulled her out and kicked her in the stomach, causing her to lose her baby. That would absolutely be investigated. And if somebody did that for absolutely no reason, or even for a mild reason that didn't warrant that kind of behavior, which I can't imagine what would, but other than doing something extremely violent where the cop had to protect himself or herself. So it didn't make sense. It didn't add up. And I said, these stories. Now, I did see something about a woman who lost her baby. I didn't read the whole story. But why was there no police report made? Why was there no investigation? That's not something cops would just ignore. Nobody would just ignore that. Like I said, the doctor would have to report that. So a lot of the anecdotal stories we hear about these things are just making deciphering this so much more difficult. Now, are there real cases where bad things happen to people? Absolutely. I'm to be a lie to say it didn't happen. But in the huge majority of cases where something like that does happen, that's totally inappropriate, there are investigations now. You know, here in New Jersey, they changed the law that says you can't just turn someone away. Everyone in your building, including secretarial staff, custodial staff, anybody in your building has to be trained on how to take a police report. Now, that doesn't mean they sit down and take an investigation report, but there are forms for making a complaint about a cop. And if there's nobody around to take it, the custodian can take the report and fill out the form and then turn it into the police department, who will then look into it. So the days of, you know, just cops are not going to investigate things. I'm not naive enough to think that in some places they probably still don't do that, but that's not the majority of the United States of America. That's just not what happens. When something bad happens, a cop does something wrong, it's investigated and they're held to account. Are there instances? Because that's always the fallback. You can fall back to an instance when the cop got off. Well, sometimes they get off because people think the cop did the wrong thing doesn't mean the cop did the wrong thing, right? Even though if it turned out bad for the citizen. Police officers, like I said, do not have to get hit in the head with a hammer. They don't have to get shot. They're allowed to protect themselves. And they're allowed to protect themselves if they feel that it's happening to them, you know? So that's where sometimes there's a question. You know, why did you feel that you had the right to do this? And then that's where a trial comes in, or a deeper investigation. Okay? So that's one of the things that you're hearing about, this legislation from Congress, that they want to strip away the immunity, the qualified immunity that officers get. Qualified immunity means if I'm doing my job, and I'm doing my job genuinely, right? I'm out there doing police work, and something happens, and somebody gets injured or hurt, or killed even, but I was acting in good faith doing my job as a cop, then I am not held personally responsible. Because police work is inherently dangerous, puts us in positions to do these kind of things. So that's why there's qualified immunity. And they qualify it by saying, if you were doing something within the title of your job, and it went bad, and you didn't do anything criminal to make it happen, then you get immunity from that. If not, why would cops ever get out of their car? Why would they ever leave headquarters? Because you could be sued for anything. The average salary in America for law enforcement in the first couple of years is like $50,000. So if every time I arrest somebody, they turn around and say I did something to them, they want to sue me, it won't be long before I'll have no money whatsoever. So those kind of things are what is totally and completely inappropriate. We have to investigate it when there's complaints of people doing the wrong thing. When a cop is accused, we have to investigate it. If they did something wrong, they'll be held to account. If not, sometimes it's just part of the job. It's a dangerous job. If not, we'll go to segment one, right? Remember when I said that? We'll have the cops stop doing all police work and they'll just, you know, take reports. They'll be report takers. And, you know, arrest suggesters if somebody wants to be arrested for what they did. So I had to get that out of my system. So we're going to see more as time goes by what's going on here. Let's look around and see what's happening in the world of politics, right? We're getting closer and closer to that election. And they're saying that, you know, President Trump's numbers are way, way down. You know, it looks like Biden's going to win from his basement. He doesn't really have to do anything. Just stay in the basement because he is so much of a better person. His plans are so much better. And the country's really sick of Trump. They're done. They want to move on. I said, okay, that's a distinct possibility. Our election can go any way. Like I say all the time, it's 51-49. And on any given day, it can go any way. So let's examine that. I've had some friends of mine say, listen, I heard that you support President Trump, and don't you hate the things that he says? Well, I don't hate everything he says. He just gave a speech to the graduating class at West Point. It was beautiful. It was a wonderful speech. I didn't hate that. When he comes out and tweets things sometimes that are stupid, yeah, I don't care for them. But the bottom line is this. If I don't care for something the guy says, I don't like his tone or his attitude, am I going to say I'll vote for socialism? Is that my choice? Because I don't like this guy? I'll give over my country, my freedom, my liberty, our financial opportunities for us and for our children because I don't like this guy? Think about that. That's really the choices that we have. And that's why people who don't like Trump don't really understand why people who do like him or are willing to tolerate him are willing to stick with him, even when he says and does dumb things. Because the alternative to Trump is an overregulated society, overtaxed society, a crushed economy, a situation where we will not be able to function, where our liberty and freedom will be at risk. Now, you say, Lieutenant Joe, come on, really? Liberty and freedom at risk? COVID-19? Did everyone just spend the time in their house for months? Did we just see businesses shut down, shackled, and owners dragged off to jail for daring to open up against an order of the government? Now, I think we have the Constitution on our side, which clearly states that you cannot do the things that these governors are doing, but they're doing it anyway. So there's a cap on that. When it comes to your freedom of speech, one of the things that we're seeing, there's a story out there I read recently that says the silent majority is growing as there's all this craziness going on in our country. The reason being, you know, it was no mystery to anyone that if you put a Trump sign in front of your house, some nudnik would come along and steal it or throw paint on it or burn it. If you hung a Trump bumper sticker on your car, somebody might smash your window or flatten your tires. That's what the left does. That's what our good, tolerant friends on the left, they do when they disagree with someone. They burn, they stab, they shoot. This is the kinds of the things the left does. They damage property. So you don't see a lot of Trump bumper stickers because people don't want their cars to get smashed. That's a reality. You don't see people flying Trump flags because they don't want their vehicles and their houses to be trashed. So the silent majority is sitting back and watching riots and looting and watching all the other things going on in our society that are trying to shut down your speech. No longer can you disagree. If you disagree with the orthodoxy of the left now, you are putting yourself in a position to lose your job. You're putting yourself in a position where your company that you work for would just be so offended that you support the flag and standing for the flag that they may have to fire you. Because to stand for the flag now means hatred and evil. And God forbid you don't want down to rip down a statue of somebody from the Civil War that was on the Confederate side. Your life is just about over. Like, they will come and burn your house. They will pull your children out of school. They will fire you from your job. All of these things will happen almost guaranteed. And what's the purpose of that? Does that help free speech? Or does that prevent free speech? Well, it very clearly prevents free speech because you cannot give your opinion. So therefore, when they take a poll, do you support President Trump and this and that and the other thing? No. People say no. No, I don't support Trump. No. Because you don't know that you just said that to somebody. They might have your name and address on that and they'll come and get you. We see the rioters, not the protesters, not the protesters. We see the rioters saying, we're coming to the suburbs next. We're coming to destroy your stuff. So why would you put a a Trump flag out there? Why would you put an American flag out there? That's all meant to silence your speech. This is where we are now. So let's look at the CHAZ, the Capitol Hill Free Zone, right, or whatever they're calling it, in Seattle, where they've declared it's no longer part of the United States. It's their own enclave. There's cop-free zones. There's free lunches. There's flags. I think there's a big tree everyone can hug. It's a wonderful place. They have seceded from the United States of America. But they are running around to businesses, apparently, taking money from them for protection. There's armed people. There's groups of people surrounding someone to question them when they feel they've done something wrong in the system. This demonstrates very clearly, for anyone who's actually got their eyes open, is how fast the left would switch to totalitarianism. Here are these young people, you know, the loving, tolerant young people that want to only do good things and they don't want the people, you know, getting hurt and protect everyone. The very first thing they do when they declare their own sovereign area is set up these rules where they'll make the rules. You can't say certain things. They will threaten you. They will take money from people. Goes immediately to totalitarianism. That is a microcosm of what would happen to all of us if this were to take over nationally. Do you see? Because that's the history of this. You can go back with any one of these socialist governments that go communist or go strong socialist. They end up controlling the will of the people, the lives of the people, the rights of the people instantly. And that's exactly what would happen here. So that's a great experiment. You know, they're calling it a great experiment in free love and free and tolerance and this and that. Only if you do and say what they tell you to do and say, are they loving and tolerant? If not, you're not welcome there. You're thrown out. So is that's not really tolerance, is it? No, that's tyranny. That's tyranny right in front of us, and we can all see it for what it is. So that's the great lesson. So I hope everyone's paying close attention there. So those are a couple things on my mind. The silent majority is growing because as people see this, they don't want to say they're for Trump. But I think come November, if the economy starts to turn around a little bit, we start to see this nonsense continue. And I don't mean the protesters' message. Don't confuse me. Their message is good. There should not be police brutality. We should root it out wherever we find it. But all the other stuff, the background Antifa, the people who are trying to disrupt our society, right? All of that continues. More and more people are going to have had enough of it. And they're going to go into the voting booth, I believe, and they're going to push that button for Trump. And they're going to give him the Senate and the Congress so that we can straighten this mess out. Right? Well, that pretty much handles us here for segment two on Chasing Justice. If you want to reach out, it's at Pangaro Global, at Pangaro Global. We'd love to hear from you. We'll be back in a minute with round three here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
All righty, 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 righty. Welcome back to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and here we are at 3 p.m. every weekday to spend time together and talk about the world and seek justice together wherever we can find it. So there's lots of other stuff going on in the news besides just rioting and people going crazy and our government acting weird. You know, let's talk about this whole idea of removing statues and removing things we don't agree with. So I'm going to take the side of the people who want to remove them for 1 minute. Okay, so here you have Civil War generals, right? Because that's a lot of the statuary we see are Civil War generals riding on their horse, you know, into battle, out of battle, through their hometown, whatever it is, there they are, right? They look regal, they look powerful, they look like they should be respected, right? This is who these people were. In reality, they were traitors to America who started a civil war. They seceded from the country and they killed thousands of Americans in the process of succeeding and having their war to be independent from the United States and open the Confederate States of America. It was traitorous behavior. That's what they did. And therefore, they also had slaves. They believed in keeping slavery, right? That's what they wanted to do. That was one of the elements of the Civil War, not the whole thing, but it was one of the elements. The Southern states wanted to keep slavery because it was a big part of their economic engine. You know, if they had to pay for all the labor that they took from people, it would devastate a lot of their wealthier people and their industry, their farming, agricultural stuff. So they were in favor of keeping slavery in place. Okay, pretty much bad things that they did. And that's why they want to tear these statues down. Why would we have statues up of traitors, right? We don't put, Benedict Arnold's statue. Where's a great statue to Benedict Arnold, right? We don't see that. We don't see in religious places when we see the iconic statues and statuary. We don't see one of Judas where everyone's, Judas was a good guy, except he screwed up there at the end, right? We don't put up his a thing about him. So why have these generals up there? Well, I'm trying to figure that out. And I was listening to someone the other night. They were talking about Abraham Lincoln and how difficult it must have been for Lincoln to have, first of all, navigated the waters of the Civil War, to have two halves of the same nation split and maybe change the world forever. I think he understood the enormity of what was before him, and he made some amazing decisions, and he guided us through that very difficult period. When that was over, Lincoln was not vindictive. He didn't punish the Southerners. He didn't go after them and make them pay with a pound of flesh for seceding and starting this war that killed so many people. Basically, he was forgiving, and he asked the country to forgive. We had gone through this cataclysm, and he decided that that would be the way to go. And as it turns out, how else could we have gotten together after such a horrible thing had there been mass punishments and people going to prison for thousands of years over what had happened? Very hard to do. You know, forgiveness is always very hard to do. But that's the way Lincoln led the country, and the country followed for the most part. Now, of course, there were a lot of sores. He paid with his life for those sores afterwards. People had very bad feelings because of what happened. They were humiliated in their defeat, some of them. Their economic system was torn apart as we were marching towards, the end of slavery after that war. That was one of the purposes. But we look and we see that Lincoln forgave. And what he did was, by allowing those statues to go up, by showing reverence for the men who fought that war on the side of the Confederates, what he is saying, and what I believe he was saying or looking at, is that while these men fought against the United States, they were fighting for their own freedom and liberty of what they felt was entitled to them. Now, we can argue their case back and forth, but I think the reality was, like the traditional forefathers before them, they saw things they didn't like, they saw a political scheme they didn't care for, and instead of just sitting there like their forefathers, they fought their way out of it, or they attempted to anyway. And they were trying to do this for what they considered to be noble reasons, their own freedom, their own liberty to run their lives the way they wanted. Now, the abomination of slavery was part of what they were all about. I get that. It was ugly and it was terrible that they would continue to fight for that and want it, but they were defeated and they accepted their defeat. And at that point, I think Lincoln's idea was, we're going to forgive them. And they fought nobly for their beliefs and their causes. You know, their generals were trying to lead their people to what their version of what freedom and liberty would be. And therefore, they hold a place of honor in a bigger scheme of what honor would be. And that's why the statues were there. All right, so that's the two sides of that as I see it. Now we come to our modern era. And now we're looking back. And we have a choice. Do we remove those statues and deface our history, right? For good and for bad. Do we deface our history? Do we take away the names of these military bases? Now, you know, if, before all this started up, how many of us here could tell us, you know, what Fort Hood was named for, which general Fort Hood was, who was Hood, and what did he do? Now, some people could tell you. Most would have no idea. Right, so they really became names. And I think I saw the president's spokesperson come out, and she said, basically, a lot of our heroes launched battles here from these bases, and they fought for America, and they fought from Fort Hood. You know, they fought from these Fort Bragg. That's where they launched from to go fight the Nazis, to go fight the Imperial Japanese, to fight the World Wars, the Korean War, to go fight the Vietnam War and the wars in the Middle East. That's where these heroes launched from. We don't know who Bragg was, that he, whatever he was. We just hear Fort Bragg, and there's pride in Fort Bragg because our heroes came from Fort Bragg to go fight for us in freedom. So tearing down our history is, I think, a negative thing in the long run. Now, if somebody wanted to put up a plaque next to the plaque of one of these generals and say that basically as a Confederate soldier, here's the things he was fighting for, and let people read that and make their own judgment of the statue, that's fine. But to rip it down is not appropriate, especially if it's not taken down by the people who live there. If the people in the community vote they want to take their statue down, I think they have every right to do it, if that's what their community wants to do. But for other people just to decide what's right and wrong and rip the statue down, that's inappropriate. Do you see the tyranny there? Do you see the chaos there? How does that go? You know, recently on social media, I was looking at all the things that a lot of these celebrities were saying. You know, words you can't use anymore, things you can't say anymore, things you can't like anymore. We have to change all the names of these bases. All of these things to appeal to their sense of offense. They're offended by these things now, and everyone has to change them so that they're not offended. And one of the things I said was, okay, what about things that I'm offended by? And what about things that other Americans are offended by? If we're offended by the idea of abortion, shouldn't we stop it? Because it offends me. So why does one side of any argument get to be offended and everyone has to change so that, you know, they're appeased? But there's a whole nother section of the society that, well, too bad about what you think. See, that doesn't work. You can't be like that. That's not, people aren't going to get along that way. It's going to create great conflict. And as all you know who've read my articles and have listened to me for a long time now, I see us on this road to eventuality. I see us on this road that's going to lead to a greater conflict somewhere down the road if we don't find some way to iron out these differences in our belief systems. I talk about human nature all the time. Human nature does not make a lot of provisions for that. I unfortunately feel this is going to have to come to the point of the winner is going to decide, are we traditional Americans or are we socialist Americans? That's how it's going to end up coming down, because that's how it always comes down. The winner makes the new rules, and I don't see anybody backing down. I don't see traditionalist people, even though they're being silent, the silent majority, because they don't want to get their stuff burned and smashed, because the authorities will not go after those who do it, because if you go after them for rioting, burning, and smashing, then you're bad too. So that stuff's okay now. You know, if you're on the side of the approved side, you can burn, smash, and steal, and you're okay. You're not going to get in trouble for it. But if you think that, you know, standing for the flag is the most appropriate thing, then you deserve to lose your job. You deserve to be punished for your inappropriate thoughts, all right? For your hate thoughts, because now they're considered hate thoughts. It used to be hate speech. And the inevitable next step, the logical next step after hate speech is hate thought. They're going to know what you're thinking by your actions. You put up a Trump sticker, that's because you hate. Not that that's what we believe as Trump people that believe in President Trump or want him to lead the country, but it's what's been assigned to us. If you like Trump, it's because you hate people, and therefore a Trump sticker indicates hate, and therefore we can do whatever we want to you because you hate. See, that's the new thing. When we turn around and say, well, you're doing A, B, C, and D, and we find that hateful, we're told to shut up and sit down. To even argue it just proves our hatred and our deserving of more punishment. So this cannot last. This cannot continue on forever at this fever pitch. It's only going to continue up. People will not look at real statistics. They will not look at real numbers when it comes to the crime situation in America. They will not look at real information. They're all going on feeling. This is what people believe. This is what people believe. I was shocked the other day. I listened to, I'm trying to think of his name, a young man from Fox News. And he came out and he was talking to someone about the problems, the riots, and there are race relation problems. And somebody made a comment that they believe that the number one killer of African-American men under 30 years old is law enforcement. Now, that's a huge number. The number one killer of African-American men under 30 years old is law enforcement. That's shocking, right? That's a shocking thing to hear. If that's true, the problem is out of hand, ridiculous. Especially when we know the number of African-Americans who kill other African-Americans was over 7,000 in 2018. So you're saying that that engagement with law enforcement is more than that? Well, then we have to look at each individual case. All right. If law enforcement is just randomly gunning people down, I'm telling you, I would be completely against it and I would fight to stop it 100%. But we know that that's not the case. We look at statistics. It'll give us the real numbers. And we just need to look at the real numbers. But see, that's part of the problem. If you look at real numbers, or if you insist that people look at real numbers, people can certainly say to you, well, you're denying the reality that we're living by, and therefore you're a hater, which I don't get it. I don't hate anybody. I'm just saying, let's look at the numbers. If the numbers comes out to be true, what they're saying, then we should spend all our efforts to fix that. But if that's not what the numbers tell us, if that's not the reality on the ground, now we have another conversation. Right? This is the only way we're going to come together. It's the only way two different sides can come together, not when one side makes the rule and the other one just has to listen. So it was interesting conversation the other day. I heard two fellas actually engaging in, and I had to stick my head into the conversation because they said, you know, we keep hearing that with our politics, it's time for a new conversation about which way do we go. And when it comes to race relations, it's time for a new conversation. We need to have these conversations and talk about this. I've said it here on Chasing Justice because I believe talking our way through our problems, understanding each other, actually hearing each other is what's going to help us figure out how to move forward as one nation under God. Get it? Even you anti-God people. All right. So when I listened to their thing, it's about the conversation. One of the young men actually made a funny comment that it's kind of scary more than it is funny. He said, when it comes to, you know, this talk, let's have this conversation. What they really mean is, we're going to tell you this is how it is, and you're going to accept it. That's the conversation. Anything other than that, people refuse to have. My side is right, and you'll accept that, or we have a problem. There is no compromise. There is no meet in the middle. There is no figure it out. That's really what it's come down to. And right now, the left has that high ground. Whatever they say is the reality we have to go by. And if you don't agree with that reality, facts be damned, you're wrong. And you are deserving of punishment. So how do you go forward from that? How do we have a conversation about these things? Right? Where is the starting point of the conversation? If the conversation point starting is, I am completely wrong and I acquiesce to your entire opinion and everything you have to say, and I ask your forgiveness, if that's the starting point so that we can go forward, we're never going to be able to go forward. You know, I'm willing to be wrong. If I'm wrong and you can prove that I'm wrong, I'm willing to change. I'm willing to think differently, to see it differently. I'm open to understanding people's thoughts that are not my experience. People have different experiences than me. I'm open to listening to it. Right? I think that's why we're all open to listening to the protesters. Right? We're not living their experience, the reason they're protesting. So we can listen. We can hear what they have to say. We can see what they're trying to tell us. And we can think differently. We can try and fix that problem because they're all Americans. We're all Americans. And if there's a problem for one of us, it's a problem for all of us. And I get that. That is probably the greatest lesson that should come out of this whole thing, but is not. Right? Instead, we're going off in 28 other different directions once again trying to get a pound of flesh out of everyone. This seems to be a moment for those who don't want to solve things to simply rattle their swords and say, aha, now you'll all have to give in to what I say. And then you have the groups who are out there who are just taking advantage of the situation. And then you have the people who I think, honestly, are not interested in fixing race relations or fixing political things. They just want to take over of the country and reforge it in their image. And that would be the Antifa groups, the right-wing extremist groups, the left-wing extremist groups, these violent communist people that are out there. They are using this as an opportunity to strike. They're not caring about what the protesters say. They don't care about traditional Americans. They want to burn it all down and start new. This is their chance. This is their opportunity to do that. And I think that puts us in a very, very bad position as well. So there's a lot of things for us to consider. You know, where is the justice in all of this? Where is the justice for the protesters who are genuinely aggrieved? I think I'm a protester. I'm aggrieved by how I saw what happened to George Floyd. I don't want that to happen. I don't want my cops doing anything like that. You know, but where are the aggrieved cops? Where do they get to come in that say, we're not Officer Chauvin. We're doing the right thing every day and we're being attacked. Where's their appreciation? Where do we listen to them? Where's that conversation? I don't know. See, but justice, for justice to really exist, all of these things have to be brought out to the open. And it has to be realized what is true and what is not true. And then we go from truth. Truth is where we're going to find the answers to these things. But to have truth, you have to have acceptance of the truth. And I don't know that we're ready for any of that on any of these sides. So, like I say all the time, I thank you for being here. And remember, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. This is Lieutenant Joe Pangaro for Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network.